I do a lot of fire sites on the scattering of the saints, what really happened to the church after the death of the prophet Joseph, and it is mind-boggling.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Following Granville Hedrick's return to Missouri, the RLDS Church decided that they felt like they should be the true owners of the temple lot. Court battles ensued. We're going to talk about how these court battles created a hostility and how they were resolved in our next conversation with historian Gene Adams. You don't want to miss it. Check out our conversation.
Well, cool. So Joseph Smith III started the, and I'm just going to call it the RLDS Church.
Yeah.
April 6, 1860.
Yeah. And it doesn't appear that there were any further efforts to try to get together at that point in time. In fact, they started fighting amongst each other.
The temple lot and the...
Yeah.
Okay.
And the temple lot, by the way, is just a convenience. It's not a part of their official name.
Right.
And
it's just the Church of Christ.
It's Church of
Christ.
But
they do put temple lot in parentheses sometimes, I've noticed.
Most of the time.
Yeah.
Most of the time. There are some congregations that don't do that.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Anyhow, by 1864, they were involved in exchanging barbs in their various publications.
The RLDS of the Temple Lot.
The True Latter-day Saint Herald. And
which is the RLDS publication.
Yeah. And the Truth Teller.
Okay.
Was the Church of Christ, published in Bloomington, Illinois. And 1864 is kind of the signal year. Granville Hedrick has a revelation, which he announces to the church and has it published, that it is time to return to the temple lot and reclaim it.
And so they're still in Illinois at this
time? Yeah, this is 1864. The Civil War is not over.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And here they're Northerners.
Mm-hmm.
That poses a secondary problem. First, they'd been kicked out in the 1830s, and now they're Northerners besides. That's why John actually comes back kind of the vanguard in 1865 to kind of get the lay of the land and see what's happening. He actually goes ahead and buys a farm, which is right outside of Independence, and that's where the today the Hedrick Cemetery is located.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
It's just east of Independence.
Hmm.
And Granville's buried there, John's buried there, and a lot of Hedricks are buried there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So in 1864, he gets this revelation, claims an angel, delivered it to him. And I've talked to actually one of the members of the Church of Christ, who's long since left us. But he remembers as a boy his being told exactly this was the bed that Granville received his revelation in.
Oh, wow.
So even the bed had been passed down through the generations. Anyhow, he was instructed to return in 1867. So
the angel said, return in 3 years.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. And so that's what they did. They went back in 67. My estimates are is that there were somewhere between 60 and 100 members of their church that made the pilgrimage back to Missouri.
Now, did they have a formal organization like the RLDS Church as far as establishing their church?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
In fact, at this point in time, Johnny Page had associated himself with Granville Hedrick and then had ordained Granville as an apostle. And so Granville felt like he, even more than being an elder, he was already an elder in the LDS Church, became an apostle.
So was Page kind of the president then?
No, he just was another one of the apostles. So Page, he was kind of like William Smith.
Okay.
He went to, and McClellan was somewhat the same.
William McClellan?
Yeah, they were here and there. McClellan joins the Church of Christ Temple Lot also.
Oh, I didn't know that.
1867, 68. He stays about a year. And that's about as long as Page stayed also.
Okay. Now, Page, he wasn't an original apostle.
No, but he's in the second set, more or less.
The second set. Okay, so after some people died.
Or it had been excommunicated during the 1830s period. He's
right.
One of, so there's, Woodruff, Taylor, Page fits into that group, and I'm thinking of somebody else. I can't write the second.
Okay, so they came in after as replacements. So probably yeah. following the, I know 1838 was a big year with the bank failure, and so a lot of people, I guess McClellan left, or was he excommunicated? Yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah, they left and were excommunicated in the 1838 period in the far west.
Okay, so Page came in as kind of a replacement.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, although he'd been a member of the church for some time, had been a extremely successful missionary in Canada.
Right. Okay. So as an apostle, he had the right to call other apostles? Is that the idea?
The general run through most of the various schisms is that even though you're cut off from the church or excommunicated or drift away, whatever it is, you still keep your authority, whatever priesthood you hold. And so that's not unusual with both McClellan and Page,
mm-hmm.
And some of the others, William Smith for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so with that, the group goes down to Independence. I don't know how often Granville came back and forth from Kansas. It's about, I've been to his farm. I'm guessing it's about maybe an hour and a half drive from Independence. So that'd been a long way in a wagon or on a horse.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Why didn't he go straight to Independence when he had
I've never been able to find out the answer to that.
Well, that's really
strange. It appears, according to family lore, and I've interviewed some of the family members of the Hendricks, according to family lore, there was somewhat of a division between John and Granville, probably over that point.
That John went, but Granville didn't?
Yeah. John was a more recent convert, and he followed the instructions that Granville had given him through Revelation, and then Granville himself ends up not going to Independence.
Well, so that's really strange.
It's kind of an interesting little thing that I've never been able to get him to give me any more definitive information on.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah. So now they're there, and they all go back. They're treated nicely. Nobody's running them out of town. But at the same year that happens, in 1867, Joseph Smith III then issues a message to the members of the church, the RLDS church, that they are not to go back to Jackson County.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he changes that position in 1877, 10 years later, and says, now it's okay. I'm just cutting short, but that's when you start seeing the RLDS people start moving back into Jackson County.
Now, by then, 1867, I'm guessing 1867, I'm guessing that Joseph III had moved back to Nauvoo. Is that no?
I think he's in Plano.
Plano, Illinois. Okay.
Yeah. Before they ever went back to Missouri. Of course, they went to Lamoni after that.
Okay. Lamoni, Iowa.
Yeah. So even though many members of the RLDS church started coming into Independence starting in 1877 and thereafter, it wasn't until the early part of the 1900s that some of the upper leadership of the RLDS church started relocating to Independence.
Okay.
Including Joseph Smith III. And there was a good rapport between, from what I found, between RLDS and Church of Christ.
Okay.
For a period of time. And then, unfortunately, the big event of the 1890s was the effort by the RLDS church to take away the temple lot. And that's known as the temple lot case or the temple lot suit, which got lots and lots of coverage across the country in terms of what was going on.
Oh, really?
Of course, you've got one small little body and one fairly large body, and it didn't look good for the Church of Christ. Their leader at the time, which is another one of my wife's ancestors, another great-great-grandfather, Richard Hill, more or less stepped aside about that time for Charles Hall, who had been a former RLDS leader on the district level, and he became the spokesperson and the leader of the Church of Christ Temple Lot, and he's the one that shepherded the lawsuit for them. They were actually sued by the RLDS Church to take away the property. And the first go-around in the district court was in their favor.
In the Temple Lot favor?
No, in the RLDS
favor. Oh, okay.
So the Temple Lot people then had to go to the appeals court. And the appeals court overturned. And so then it went to the Supreme Court in 1896. And then the Supreme Court remanded it back to the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for implementation. And everything stayed the same.
So the claim for the RLDS Church was we're the rightful heirs because Joseph III is the rightful heir.
And therefore, he should be the one that should have the property. Well, that didn't set well with the second, with the Court of Appeals, because they said everybody basically in Independence that used to own some of that original land could run into the same problem. So I'm not remembering exactly what the correct legal terminology is, but it's basically you've waited too long to bring your action to the front.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of that either, but okay, so 1867, Temple Lot people are buying up land. They buy up the Temple Lot. I believe somebody just posted a map. I know there were supposed to be 24 temples.
Yep.
Originally, and I'll have to see if I can get a copy of that map. It was really cool because there were supposed to be 24 temples on there. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that goes back to 1831-33 period when the church had established themselves in Jackson County, Independence in particular. Joseph Smith dedicated the Temple Lot on August the 3rd, 1831, in the presence of, the traditional story is 8, but I've documented 16 people that were there. Regardless, that property is purchased by Partridge in December of 1831 when it became available for sale. And that's a whole nother story all by itself.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with historian Gene Adams. In our next conversation, we'll talk about how some of these early Missouri settlers in the early 1820s and 30s weren't about to let any outsiders, Mormon or not, own any land that they shouldn't get. They went to some extreme measures to make sure that they were going to be winners of this land auction.
So Flournoy had the right as a squatter to make the first purchase. Furthermore, he's the postmaster in town, a well-established individual. Nobody's going to ace out those original squatters. In fact, they were so intent on this, Rick, they were so intent that an individual that came to town speculating to buy up lots around Independence and so forth, they actually took him and put him in jail.
So who in jail?
This individual from Virginia.
Okay.
So that he could not go to the auction.
Oh, really?
And he then tried to get a local judge to help him, and the individuals, quote, landholders in good old Jackson County, can you imagine this happening? They threatened the judge they'd put him in jail with him if he interfered in any way.
Wow.
So as a result, nobody interfered with the squatters. They bought the property. Jones Flournoy sold it a week later, a portion of his acreage. He sold it to Edward Partridge.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available in either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.